Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of A Pen and a Napkin Podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to our interview series, episode number 270. And really excited to have Luke Olson, head boys basketball coach at Bennington High School, just to the northwest of Omaha, basically Omaha now, I guess. You could, you know, it's all one and the same. It's all kind of running into each other. But really excited to have Coach Olson on the podcast here this week and to chat about some hoops here. But before we get to Coach Olson, of course, we want to thank our founding sponsor, Cosette Chiropractic, located 144th of Maple here in Omaha. Coaches, if you or any of your athletes are struggling with balanced neck or spinal issues, have them go see Cosette Chiropractic. You can check out their practice at CosacChiro.com. Follow us on Twitter at A Pen and a Napkin. We try to put out daily coaching tidbits on the Twitter handle, so be sure to follow us there. Download, rate, review. You're listening on iTunes, Spotify. Subscribe. That's the biggest thing you could probably do, is subscribe to A Pen and a Napkin. Give us 5 stars. Do all those things. Write a nice review. The more folks do that, the more we move up in the rankings. And when folks are looking for podcasts about coaching basketball, Pen and a Napkin pops up there. So questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me, apenandanapkin@gmail.com. We are excited. We are ready to go here. It is, we're on the brink of a little precipitation here on, I think it's a Tuesday night. It's April Fool's Day. I forgot it is April Fool's Day, Coach Olson. Coach, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
You bet. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it. So, yeah, well, let's dive into it, Coach. We've got a lot to talk about tonight. You know, let's just kind of start it where we usually start it here. For folks that don't know the Luke Olson story, the Luke Olson basketball journey, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you ended up at Bennington High School.
Yeah, you know, my dad was head football coach, so he was well versed in back coach me all the way through my youth basketball. But he was actually head football coach in high school, so you know, I was a coach's kid, so I was around the game, all you know, multiple coaches. Played for Dave Ullman in high school. He was a, you know, he's a legendary coach, won numerous state titles. So I really appreciate that. And I've had obviously several coaches impact me in a lot of different styles along the way, but he was the first one. I just had, you know, just the way he treated me and the amount of success he had at multiple stops. And then, so from Norfolk, went to Hastings College and played for Mike Trader and Lance Creech, both, you know, different styles, but both have been really good to me over my career. Like when I need something, I need somebody to make a call, they're both, you know, without hesitation. And so, you know, after Hastings, took a job at Millard North with Chip Baugh. Under Chip Baugh, was there for 5 years, and we had a really good staff. A lot of guys on that staff are now head coaches across the state in multiple levels. And so I didn't know it at the time, but, you know, like Kyle Juergens and TJ O'Connor and Mike Hitzmiller and John O'Connor, we had, you know, a really good group of young coaches there that we were pretty hungry. And we just kind of thought it was that way across the state and not really understand how lucky we were to be, you know, around each other for a few years. And then took the Bennington job back in 2012. That was when my youngest daughter was born. So I think we, within a 30-day span, bought a new house, took a new job, and had a baby. Just tried to pile on to the 130-day window, and I've been there ever since. And so I've been lucky. I've had a, like I said, I grew up a coach's kid. My dad was a big influence on me growing up. Ben Reese was a few years older than me at Norfolk, and so we've always stayed in contact throughout the coaching realm. Chip Baugh was obviously a big influence when I coached for him for 5 years. And then Trades and Coach Creech and Hastings and Coach Ullman. So I've seen multiple styles. I was a multi-sport guy growing up and just settled on basketball. I was kind of the one that had, you know, had my heart from the young age and the passion's always kind of been there. And I actually, when I graduated from Hastings College, went into banking for a year and a half. And it was awesome. I loved it, but I just felt like something was missing. And so I went back and got my master's and coached at Hastings College for 2 years. You get my grad assistant, get the master's there, and then eventually went to Learn North. So it's been kind of a, it's been a fun journey. It's just been fast. I hear people, I remember when I was younger, people say it's, you know, you blink and it's there. And I used to think, yeah, I'm sure it kind of feels that way, but they're right. Like, it's just, it feels like yesterday I took the banking job, and that's just, as you get older, I feel like life goes faster and faster, but mm-hmm. It's been a fun journey. My wife, Holly's been, she's been awesome. She's a great coach's wife. And my son, just graduated or is going to graduate this year. So I got to, you know, be able to coach him for his journey. And I got 2 daughters that both play on the girls' side. So, fun family, you know, we're in that the busyness. It's a fun busy, but it's busy, and we feel like we got something going on every night. And I know at some point we're going to miss that, but just trying to enjoy it right now.
Well, I think the wisest decision you made, Luke, was to, you know, set yourself up by financially by getting out of banking and getting into teaching and coaching. I mean, that, you know, your retirement portfolio has to be bursting at the seams after that decision.
It makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? I know. I know. Sometimes you go back and wonder, and I used to, when I was younger, play the what if game, and I think you can. You know, you can go a lot of different routes, and I did enjoy banking. I love the people I work with. I don't know why I wanted to go back and coach. It's something kind of pulled at me, but definitely, you know, there's been a lot of benefits, but the paycheck's not been one of them.
Yeah, well, it gets your hooks in you. It gets its hooks in you, and it's hard to let go. I mean, it really is. That's why people come back to it. They keep coming back to it, and it's just. It's just, there's just something about that. And everybody has their different thing. I mean, for me, I didn't necessarily enjoy game night that much, but I loved going to practice. I could practice 365 days a year and teach and piece things together and do stuff like that. You know, game nights were okay. I mean, but I enjoy that. But some people love the game nights. Some people love the individual workouts. Some people love, whatever that may be, you know, and it's all just dependent on who you are.
Mm-hmm. You're right. Yep.
Yep. One of our newest categories in the I don't even know if it's a category, it's a question, I guess, I don't know, the Karen Self, a pen and a napkin moment. Luke, when was the first time that you remember getting out a pen and a napkin or a piece of paper or whatever and kind of scratching some stuff out and kind of thinking, you know, this coaching thing might be for me?
Yeah, you know, when I was in college playing, I'd been told by a couple guys that, you know, I should look into coaching, and I, you know, just kind of wrote off like, no, I just enjoy the playing. I like to compete in part, not really understanding what the coaching side. I'd seen my dad do it, and I always watched him go to clinics, and he was a big note taker, and Dave Owen was big on note taking. So I remember in high school, you know, just kind of creating plays and having ideas and even kind of being interested in scouting, watching film before, you know, back in the days when they had, you know, VHS tapes and DVDs that they have to drive across the state to get. But I remember kind of having an interest in the game plan, but not the full cycle of coaching. I was a big reader. I remember reading Toughness by Jay Billis and Coach Omen giving me a book when I was younger stuff. And it was just basketball stuff. And you just kind of read it and it talked about multiple scenarios. And so I don't know if there was one aha moment, but I do remember at some point in that high school, college journey, kind of becoming more interested in just playing and the preparation and the organization, the game plan and how you win, instead of just going out and playing and pick up basketball, kind of the scheming behind it kind of drew my attention. And so I think it just kind of developed over time. And like I said, being around good coaches and watching, number one, how they impacted me and people around me, but also their discipline and how they got themselves ready and got their team ready and the stuff that went on behind the scenes that the average fan really didn't understand, didn't know about, how, you know, just small things like how you guard certain actions and what the preparation looks like the day before a game and how you get ready mentally before the game and the adjustments you make at halftime. And just those things kind of started intriguing me. I remember that at that age. And so I don't know if I ever sat down and just started jotting stuff down, but just over time, that's where the interest kind of developed.
Well, it should come naturally. Like you said, your dad was football coach. Your brother was basketball coach up until last season. So obviously, it's in the blood there. What are from your point of view? What are some things that you see that you have in common with your coaching style with your brother and with your dad, and maybe what are some things that, you know, you do differently than your brother or your dad? You know, what are some similarities and differences between the three of you guys?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, because all three have had different levels of success in different sports and different, you know, just different strategy or I guess different styles. But I think all three of us are pretty relationship based. You know, I remember my dad. You know, growing up, he was very intentional on creating and building relationships and making kids want to play hard. never felt like a dictator, never felt like somebody was just cracking whip and making you do things. You felt buy-in, you wanted to be held accountable. And I think he's always done a good job of that and continuing to grow. Nate, I think, is, you know, similar to me. I think we're both, you know, competitive. You know, we've played each other, I think, a couple times, and it's hard on my parents, I think, you know, when we used to play, and it's hard on us too. Like, neither one of us wants to lose, but we also want to beat, just because we know how much those losses kind of eat at both of us.
Yeah.
But I think we're both very similar in how we approach the game, from all, even like the fundamentals, you know, man-to-man defense and how you generate offense and what you want to do drill-wise and the type of practices you run. But obviously, we have to be different just because we're dealing with different clientele. You know, Broken Bow and the schedule they play and the kids they have and the community they have is different than Bennington. And so you have to be different to try to adjust to what you feel like is going to make your program successful. And so I think how we approach the game and how we approach kids is very similar. Probably our style and how we, you know, approach our off season or during the season, sharing athletes, stuff like that, probably has to be different just because of the nature of the situation was. But I do think, you know, when we get together and we talk, I do find us having a lot more similarities, which makes sense because, you know, you're a product of your environment. And, you know, Nate and I both grew up with the same daddy, coached us both in football. We both played at Hastings College. So we've had very similar journeys. And I think as you grow, you kind of develop your own style, but you also, your style is very, you know, similar to what you've been around. You just try to, you know, take pieces from each style that you like and try to develop your own. And you know, after so many years, you kind of look back and we are very similar in a lot of ways with how we handled kids and in-game management and stuff like that. And so whenever we would play at Western school, he would be the first call I'd make about scouting and what do you see and what do you need to do. And he would do the same whenever they traveled east.
Yeah. Yeah. And if he didn't, you know, you'd make him pay for it at the next family reunion. Yeah. One of the things I found really interesting about you, Luke, was a certified mental game coach. And, you know, we all talk about the mental game and how important it is to get our kids in the right mental place, to play intense but relaxed, to play with the enthusiasm of a child but the responsibility of an adult, and all of these other different things, to be into the moment but not be in too big into the moment, and all these other things. You know, I'm guessing that you've used a lot of that training with your kids to help them as much as possible to understand the game mentally, the ups and the downs and different things like that. How do you incorporate your training as a certified mental game coach with your program, with your players to get them, in the right direction on practice nights, game nights, everything that you do?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's a loaded question. I think you can go a lot of different avenues. I think it changes each year. You know, just like, you know, we're doing every offseason, you're trying to gain more knowledge with basketball. And I do the same thing with the mental side. It's something I've always been interested in. My sister's actually the one that she started her company and hired. I was her third employee when we got certified and started really working with athletes and clients. And again, it's even outside of athletes, it's CEOs, just anybody that wants to improve performance. And there's, I remember in college, you know, we'd play Wednesday, Saturday, and I would play really well on Wednesday. And then 3 days later, I'd play awful. I remember wondering, like, I have changed in no way, shape, or form physically. I'm the same strength, same speed, same everything. How can I play so much worse or so much better 3 days later? And it just shows you how important the mind is. And if you're physically, you know, skilled and capable and talented and athletic, it really is not nearly as effective unless your mind's in the right state. And so that's something that kind of got me interested in it. So how we use it, I mean, it just depends on the kid. I do find it's hard to do both. You know, as a mental coach or as a performance coach, when we talk to our clients and athletes, we're focused only on them and what's best for them and how we can manage the things that they can control. Because a lot of times what we find is the stuff that's causing a lot of the issues, whether it's stress or expectations, pressure, moving on from mistakes, those things, it's whenever athletes are focused a lot of their energy on things outside their control. Mm-hmm. And so when we're doing that, yeah, working on that side of it, we're trying to give them more control and strategies for, you know, shifting focus and a variety of other, you know, types of things. When you're, you know, the head basketball coach there, you got to find ways to motivate kids despite circumstances. And so I use a lot of strategies on individual kids and with teams and stuff like that, but it all depends on the team, you know, because every team got a different journey, and it's not a cookie cutter where you don't just run through the same thing every year and expect to have the same results. You kind of got to figure out where they are. And I think what I've learned is when I was younger, I tried to do, as a head coach, I tried to do everything well. And I think we all kind of go through that process where you just realize that if you're going to try to do everything well, you're going to do everything average. You got to figure out what you can do really well and then become as good at that as you can. And I think that's what I've sacrificed is I don't spend a ton of time with X's and O's. I don't spend a ton of time drawing up fancy out of bounds plays. My energy goes into making kids feel free enough to compete so that they can play at their potential and then develop drills and stuff in practice and outside of practice to kind of put them in those kind of situations mentally so that they're more prepared to play when they get to the game. And so obviously for that, it's different for each athlete. So you got to get to know what the athlete, where they are in their journey, what they're struggling with, what you can do to create the type of environment that they feel safe enough to make mistakes. And I think that's something that we're all seeing is right now there's a lot of fear in our athletes. They are very fearful of making mistakes, of letting people down, of not meeting up to the expectations that either they've placed on themselves or somebody else has. And so trying to help them navigate that, because obviously we want to have successful basketball careers, but it's such a good life skill too. And that's kind of goes back to what the whole purpose behind this thing is. And so I guess to answer the question, I don't know how I do it on a yearly basis. I do know that I'm very in tune. I try to be in tune with the kids. I have a lot of talks with them one-on-one to kind of see where they are in their journey, how they're feeling about things, and then try to tailor when we do have, you know, individual workouts to help them improve on that. But when the practices come about, your goal is to get your team as ready as possible. And if there's a kid that's struggling, that's not the time to spend a lot of one-on-one time with their mental prep. You gotta get your team ready. And so I think during practice, I'm the head coach, and we try to get things done as quickly and as efficiently as possible, putting them in tough situations and putting them in pressure-packed situations. But outside of practice is where that mental game stuff probably comes in more handy because I'm allowed to get away from the emotion of practice and the intensity of practice and try to find ways to build them up outside of the lines, if that makes sense.
Oh, no, absolutely. I wanted to follow up on something. You talked about the kids and kind of some of the changes in the kids and the pressures that they're putting on themselves. I mean, is that one of the biggest changes you've seen, Coach, in your career?
Yeah, it is. And you see it coming. I don't know where everybody else feels on it, but I got my youngest daughter's in eighth grade, so I coached my son all the way through youth basketball, and I've watched my daughters, and I just – sometimes I step back and wonder what we're doing to our kids when I walk into a youth gym and just see the type of environment we're putting these kids in. It's the way I've talked to some athletes is it's like taking an elementary kid and putting them in AP calculus and saying, you need to work as hard as you can. And if it's not going well, you got to work harder. And you're not giving them the tools and strategies to be successful. You're putting them in almost like a lose-lose situation and expecting them to just work hard and figure it out. Well, listen, you got to be mentally tough. You got to move on. But if you're not going to teach a kid how to do that, you really put them in a tough spot. And I watch youth sports, I just see athletes that are just playing with just massive amounts of pressure, expectations, stress, to the point where we're seeing a lot of our athletes not want to play beyond middle school. And then they're getting out of it for a lot of reasons. Mm-hmm. And those reasons to me are things that can be improved with some shifting, but it's not in high school. By the time we see them in high school, you can still make changes and adjustments, but you're trying to break years and years of habits.
Yeah.
I just feel like kids right now, what we see a lot of is, you know, kids that have a hard time moving on from mistakes, kids that their identity is tied into their sport for a lot of reasons. And I understand, like, if you're a parent and you spend the type of money that they're spending on youth sports and on what we're charging in some of the other areas of youth sports, like, you expect to get a return on your investment. Like, if you're going to spend that kind of money, you need to see results. And so that's just increasing the amount of pressure the kid's feeling. And I just feel like, you know, the way I talk to athletes is, you know, your level of fear and your level of enjoyment is like a seesaw. And so if there's a large amount of fear that you're playing with, you're not enjoying the game.
Yeah.
A lot when a kid plays well, it's like a sense of relief. You're not even enjoying it. You're just released. And right now I see a lot of kids that are playing with a lot of fear, and that fear is coming from a lot of different causes and sources. Mm-hmm. And so we spend a lot of time figuring out where it's coming from and trying to, you know, just develop a different perspective to lower the fear. Because once you get the fear level lower, then that joy level comes back. And you can see kids that the kids that are truly enjoying the game, that are playing at a high level and enjoying it, and they look aggressive, they look fearless. It's because they've been able to remove some of those, you know, unfair expectations that are driving up that fear. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like some athletes aren't being told how to do that. For maybe a lot of reasons, but it's something that you just see getting worse and worse every year, I feel like.
Yeah, I think you know, the ROI, the return on investment, I think when it comes to that parent part of it, I mean, there's a lot of different things. So, you know, they hear it from their friends, you know, the social media clips. They want to be on the highlight reels, and so they feel pressure to do that. I mean, there's just the expectations. I mean, there's a lot of different things out there, and it's hard. I would try to tell my kids, hey, just go out there and play. We use the word joy a lot, Luke, when just play with joy. Play with joy, play with enthusiasm. Yes, we have to concentrate. Yes, we have to play hard. Yes, we have to be mentally aware, but play with joy. Play with joy. And, I think we had some kids that did that. And then I think we had some kids that struggled with it because of, like you said, that ingrained mindset that unfortunately they've been dealing with for a long, long time.
Yeah. You see it in multiple sports as well. At young ages, and I don't know how you see it in your journey. Some of my best athletes, by the time they graduate with college offers and college scholarship opportunities, are saying no. Yeah. And we've had several good players just choose not to play. And to me, that's sad because, when I was offered the opportunity, I jumped at it. I couldn't wait, and that's just something that everybody did. If you had a chance to play, you did. And right now, if they're not, there's something broken with the system. And I don't see anything changing anytime soon. So you're right. I think a lot of times high school coaches are the bridge between trying to, bring an athlete, and nothing against any specific AU team, because everybody's doing it for a lot of good reasons. But I just feel like everybody's trying to keep up and put their kids in position to be successful. And the result of that is lots of expectations, lots of pressure. And then kids are forced to try to manage this stuff without really any tools or resources to know how to do it. So then it just becomes do I get lucky and play well, or am I going to have to manage, whatever is going to come my way the next time I get on the court? Mm-hmm.
Coaches, I am really excited to announce this year's lineup for our 5th annual Pen and a Napkin Coaches Clinic. This year's clinic date is Saturday, April the 12th. It's going to take place at Mary R. Queen Gymnasium, located at 3405 South 119th Street here in Omaha. We've got 3 on-court demonstrators. Andy King, the head boys basketball coach at Elkhorn North High School, will get the day started with his clinic on developing your team through 5-on-5 controlled scrimmages. Jody Steyer, my good friend from Iowa State University, the associate head coach at Iowa State with the women's basketball team, is going to talk about individual player development in small group settings. Jamie Smith, the head girls basketball coach at Solon High School in Iowa, one of the best I've ever seen, teach about shooting fundamentals, is going to talk to us about how to put together a great shooting workout for your players. Coach Smith won a state championship last year at the Class 3A level in Iowa. Those are 3 on-court demonstrators. Then we're going to have 3 off-court demonstrators. Our lunch keynote speaker is my guy Raz Vanderloo, the head boys basketball coach at Sioux City East High School. And also, Raz is very involved with USA basketball. I'm just going to let Raz cook. He's going to talk to us just with a basketball smorgasbord of topics about what Raz wants to talk about that day. Then we're going to have 2 smaller breakout sessions. Lucas Dollinghouse, the head boys basketball coach at Johnson Brock here in high school, highly successful program. He's also an administrator, and he's going to talk about coaching through an administrator's eyes along with some other things. Our other breakout session is Weekday Wade Coulter, the head girls basketball coach at Gretna East High School, and he's going to talk about building a pressure defensive system. One of the great things about the Pen and a Napkin Clinic is, in addition to our presenters, we also have 2 designated breakout sessions where you will get the opportunity to discuss various topics with other coaches attending the clinic. These sessions are a great way to pick the brains of your peers at the clinic, and it's one of the most enjoyable points of our annual clinic. And then, hey, after a long day of learning about hoops, it's time to kick back and relax. We're going to have an optional post-clinic social at Wine 121. It's right down the street from Mary R. Queen, about a mile and a half down the road. I want to thank my friend TK, Tom Crable, for opening his doors to the clinic again. It's just $15 per coach for anybody that wants to join us there. Our Pen and a Napkin Clinic is one of the most affordable clinics in America. I mean, it is really, really, really affordable. You're going to get over 7 hours worth of information. That's $60 for a coach. If you're just a singular coach that wants to come up and check it out, it's $60 a coach. If you bring yourself and another coach from your staff, it's $110. 3 coaches from your staff, $150. If you bring four or more coaches from your staff, it is only $45 per coach. We've got a sliding scale. It's all about getting better at an affordable price. So if you are interested in signing up for our Pen and a Napkin Clinic, look to the flyer on Twitter and mail it in. You can scan it in. You can do all those different things, or you can DM me or you on Twitter, or you can email me a penandanapkin@gmail.com. Registrations are due by Thursday, April the 10th, 2025. Coaches, do not miss out on one of the best coaching clinics in America. Coach, let's talk about your journey itself there at Bennington. You've been there for over a dozen years now, and it's been quite the evolution. It's been a sprint, to be frank. I mean, it is probably, I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but in our state, probably the one of the fastest growing districts, if not the fastest growing district in the state. I think when you got there, you were Class C, and then you went to, obviously, you transitioned from C to a small B. And now you're one of the bigger B's, to the point where in 2 or 3 years here, you're going to be splitting into Bennington and whatever the heck they're going to call the other Bennington. Maybe they'll just call it the other Bennington. I don't know. When you got there, I'm sure you anticipated growth, but did you ever anticipate growth this quickly, and kind of how has that affected your program and your coaching style?
Yeah, no, we didn't. You know, obviously we moved to Bennington because I liked I hate to say the small town, but it felt more small town. It was big, and we knew it was going to eventually become big enough to be competitive in Class B, but we didn't expect it to go as fast as it did, and to the point now where, you know, when you're walking all with her, it's really difficult to be a good athlete, and especially a multi-sport good athlete, because there's so many, you know, good athletes. And obviously that brings a lot of really positive things, a lot of positive things, but also there's some challenges too. And I think the one thing that I found at Bennington is a lot of people move to Bennington for the same reasons. They like the community. They like the interest in sports. There's a lot of interest in sports. They like the small town feel, but there's so many people that moved out there, and it's hard to maintain that small town feel and the support. Like, I remember, you know, the first handful of years we went to state, it was such a big deal because at that time, not many teams were qualifying for the state tournament. And, you know, the entire community would be excited. And now there's still a ton of excitement, but it happens so frequently. I think people don't realize how hard it is to have successful seasons because there's so many of our teams that are having success, which is a big positive, but also it kind of takes away some of the joy of accomplishing goals and getting to conference championships and district championships and state tournaments and stuff like that. So I think just trying to maintain the same kind of the relationships and the culture that you want, because as you grow, you know, culture is an ever changing thing where it's 1 year away from, you know, losing it or going in a real negative direction. So just trying to maintain that, especially when you have people that are moving in and they don't have a great grasp yet of what it's like in Bennington, and trying to teach kids and have your older players kind of model and teach it. And luckily we've been really fortunate. We've had great kids, great athletes, across the board in, you know, many sports. Mm-hmm. Even before we were having a ton of success, we had great kids, and the parents in Bennington are really supportive, really good administration. So we have all the tools in a really positive way, but the growth has definitely been challenging because I think a lot of people move out because they want their child to have success as force and be involved in multiple activities. And by the time they get to high school, the growth has happened so fast that it's almost impossible.
Yeah.
And so that's been something we've definitely struggled with. And I've seen for my kids too, like all three of them are still multi-sport athletes, but you can, you know, the amount of time and energy required to be good in those sports has tripled from when I first took the job. You know, it used to be, I don't know what you guys are like, but when I took the job, my evaluation was from the start of basketball season to the end of the season.
Yeah.
And it's a four part where it's during the season and it's the spring, and then you're evaluated in the summer and you're evaluated in fall. So the expectations, you're doing stuff year round.
Yep.
What do you do for your three sport athletes? Like, how do you manage that? And that's not something that we had to worry about, you know, 10 years ago. But as the success grows and as there's more interest going, you're doing year round stuff, and that's not always in the best interest of the athlete.
Yeah, it's a great problem to have, but nonetheless, it is a problem because you do want to encourage those 2 and 3 sport kids, because you're going to need the, you know, for like, you know, football, let's say, They have a bunch of kids specializing right now. I'm not saying that they are, but I'm just using that as an example. And you know, but they need kids to fill in the gaps. You need a kid who, you know, basketball is not their favorite, but it's their second or third favorite, but you need that quality athlete to fill out your roster, but yet you need them to get reps and get some work in the off season as well. But they might be a lot more worried about football or track or, you know, whatever their scenario may be. And so it's a tough balance.
Yeah, and the coaches, I think, dictate how that balance goes. And we're lucky at Bennington where we have, you know, I would almost say all of our coaches are very pro multi-sports. And so the communication between coaches where, you know, kids aren't being told one thing and shown another, you know what I mean? And because it is tough, like if you're being told, you know, it's important to be a multi-sport athlete, but you're one of your coaches expecting to be everything year round, you're sending mixed signals. So we're lucky at Bennington. Everybody that's on our staff, I feel like, is very pro multi-sport, which means you're going to sacrifice in some ways, but you know, winning breeds winning. And if you're winning in multiple sports, it's going to help you out. You may have to sacrifice some workouts here and there, but in the grand scheme of things, it's better for the kid.
Yep.
And your program's going to benefit as long as you find that balance of guys that really want to be good in basketball. They are doing year-round stuff versus guys that can help you in the season, but maybe have to put energy into other sports as the year progresses too.
Yep. You've had a nice run there, you know, 7 state tournaments. But still haven't quite got to that Saturday level, Coach. What do you feel like is kind of that one thing that you're missing, or maybe I think there's two ways that people could look at it. What do we need to do differently? And you kind of drive yourself nuts, or you kind of go kind of the Tony Dungy, what I call the Tony Dungy route. Hey, we're just going to keep doing what we're doing, and eventually we're going to get the payoff that we want when it comes to the winning and the losing I'm talking about there. You know, kind of where are you at?
Yeah, I'll be a mix. You know, it is bothering. I mean, obviously you want to get down and you want to make a run at it. And I think we've had 3 overtime losses. And you know, and so I always tell my coaches, you know, we got to be careful letting the scoreboard dictate whether we play well or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the scoreboard doesn't always tell the full truth. And so I try to go through the same process every year. You look at the game and what didn't go well. And a lot of times you can drop back to 1 or 2 plays. If you change those 1 or 2 plays, you probably win.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a certain, you know, you got to catch some breaks. You got to get a shot that's going to fall. And so we felt good about how we've played down there several years. Sam got the job done. And so it comes down to what do we need to do differently to get our kids ready. And I don't think it's a major change, but it is something that, you know, we got to figure out, you know, because we want to get down there. And it's the goal, obviously, at the start of the year is to get down there. And then once you get down there, the goal is to get, you know, to make a run at it. And we felt a couple of years that we've had a chance to make a run, and it's come down to a play here, a play there. It's certainly not the kids' fault. You know, mm-hmm. They're doing what they're coached to do, but there's a couple of pieces that we need to, you know, we need to get comfortable down there. And that's something that I felt like we weren't early in my career. I knew the first year we made it, I felt like when we got down there, I could sense we were just happy to be there, excited. You know, but it wasn't like I didn't feel a sense that we were going after it, like we really wanted to go win the whole thing. And again, that probably falls back on me. I didn't prepare them well enough in some way, shape, or form. And as that class, you know, we had 2 freshmen on that team. As they progressed, you know, they made the semis as juniors, and their senior, they got beaten overtime in the quarterfinals. And I felt like if they won that game, they would have been on Saturday, maybe won it. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, I felt like there's been some things that have worked well. But, you know, that's the life of a coach is when you lose, you sit there and do all the things that aren't going well and trying to fix them, but you don't want to overfix it. You don't want to correct too much because you don't want to send the wrong message. And things are going well. I mean, obviously getting there is not an easy task. So to get there as often as these guys have gotten there, it's been a good thing. But down there, we just got to figure out what we need to do differently to get to Friday and get to Saturday, because I know we've had kids that are capable of playing on those days, but on occasion it's come down to 1 or 2 plays that we just haven't been able to make.
Yep. What about you, Luke? You know, what are, you know, in the next, I always kind of divided the season into, you know, winter and summer. And then you kind of had this, you know, you spent the spring getting ready for the summer and you spent the fall getting ready for the winter. So as you get ready for your quote unquote summer season here, what are things that you're looking at for your skill set as a coach to get, you know, to put yourself make yourself a little bit better to coach your kids this summer?
Yeah, it starts with, you know, we had a pretty heavy senior class. You know, my son Gas class was, you know, we had a lot of those guys, 4 stars, really 5 stars until we lost. We had some season-ending injury. And so we ended up starting a sophomore. So a big key for us is we don't have many juniors coming back. It's a smaller class. We had three play last year. And so that sophomore group, we're relying on a lot along with the three juniors coming back, because I need to generate, like, my relationship with them is getting, that's my priority right now, is just getting on the same page with them. And they're great kids. They're very competitive, but they're sophomores. And so I don't have the type of relationship with them that we need to have going forward. So it starts there, you know, getting to know those kids on a more personal level, what motivates and what I can do to help them achieve the goals that they have set. We also have to kind of figure out our identity. Like, we literally lost, you know, every starter but one, and coming back, you know, it takes some time to figure out, you know, what kind of style. And I have some ideas, but we need to figure out what this group is going to excel at, what this group can go be, you know, really, really good at and have success at. And that's going to, you know, with our spring workouts, we got a lot of kids playing on different spring teams, but, mm-hmm. you know, we're on spring break right now. We're going to start the week after with getting to the gym a little bit. So just getting to know the kids, figuring out what type of, you know, offense, defense, and all the nuts and bolts that we feel like this group is kind of naturally doing a good job of, and then how can we build that into what we currently do and figure out the best mix to go forward. And then, you know, I spent last year talking to coaches just about what your previous question is, just how do you get your kids ready to play state? I think that's something that I try to do every year, is just pick one or two coaches that I feel like their styles are similar to mine. And just go sit down and do what you and I are doing right now, is just talk hoops, what they do, things that they like, and just kind of take one or two things that they're doing and try to, you know, see how they can fit into, you know, our current system. And I'm at the stage now where I simple is more important to me. You know, I think a lot of coaches, they like the complexity of it. I think the most important thing I can do is take as much information as I can and then whittle it down to what are the two or three most important things that we need to do a good job of to have success this year. So I just need to make sure my mind's fresh. You know, I get to the point at the end of the season where, you know, you're just physically and mentally exhausted. So I need to take some time and detach for a little bit. And when I come back, the energy level and the joy level's there, and ready to get after the spring and summer, because it's a good group. I'm really excited about this group. It's going to be a challenge, because we don't have, I think we're going to be maybe not have the type of expectations we've had in most years, just because we are going to be so young. But I know this group's not, you know, not shying away from wanting to be good. And so I'm excited to kind of see what they're.
Mm-hmm. Coaches, are you looking for a way to improve not only your players, but your parents' perspectives on what they should expect when they come to your program at the high school level? Well, a pen and a napkin has something for you, your families, your players, your parents, and maybe even yourself as well. Varsity Preparation Academy, the first annual Varsity Preparation Academy, is going to take place May 3rd and 4th, 2025, here in Omaha, Nebraska, at Omaha Marion High School. That's at 7400 Military Avenue here in Omaha. This is for girls basketball players grades 6 through 9 going into the 25-26 school year. VPA is all about educating parents and players to prepare themselves for the varsity sports experience, both on and off the floor. I'm taking all the things that I've learned in my career from all the camps that I've gone to, all the camps that I've worked, all the stuff that I've done on my own here, from USA Basketball to Snow Valley to Point Guard College to the stuff that I've done, and we're combining it all into one really, really intense weekend to help these future varsity athletes get ready for the varsity level. We're going to work on skill sessions on the floor. We're going to have many sessions on the floor talking about important things about the, you know, like why coaches substitute, the importance of routine, different things like that. And then we're going to have classroom sessions where we're going to sit down and talk about different things that are going to be important for the development of the player and the parent. We're also going to have a parent meeting to talk to parents about what to expect in the high school experience, what they should be looking for as their child goes through this. So coaches, pass this on to your players, to your parents. I think it's going to be a really, really good deal. It's $175 for the weekend. That's literally less than $10 an hour that they're going to pay to get this great experience, t-shirts, binders for note-taking, all sorts of different things. Meals are going to be provided. We are going to take care of your players and your parents. A pen and a napkin is going to be there to help you out. Always done that, and we're going to do this once again on a different wavelength, on a different level, with the first annual Varsity Preparation Academy, May 3rd and 4th, 2025, here in Omaha, Nebraska. Coach, let's talk a little John Wooden. How's that sound? Yeah, you know, pretty smart guy, you know.
Yeah, really busy. Yeah,
did okay for himself. We're gonna get out Wood in a lifetime of observations, and we're gonna talk a little John Wood and a little John Quidden quote of the day here. So, from way in the back of the book here, Coach Olson, page 180, here is the John Wooden quote of the day. I'll throw this out here and give you a second to digest, and we'll roll here. So, John Wooden quote of the day is: it isn't friendship when someone does something nice for you. He or she is simply being a nice person. Friendship is mutual, doing good things for each other. There's no real friendship when only one side is working at it. Both must give for there to be friendship.
I like it, yeah. You know, my first thought is, as you're reading it, it made me think of a team I had a few years ago where I just felt like we weren't as connected as a group as we needed to be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whether you call it friendship or you call it chemistry, you know, it looks different ways. And so two things that we talked about is, number one is you can't confuse being nice with chemistry.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that the kids said is when we were in your meeting and I'm asking, like, you know, what did you think? Like, why weren't we very connected? What was going on? They're like, Coach, we don't get it because we all get along. And that's when I said, that's a great comment. I'm glad you brought that up. We got to understand that getting along doesn't mean chemistry.
Yeah.
Like you get along with a lot of people, but chemistry means you have the ability to get on somebody's case and challenge them and get chippy at practice. And that doesn't impact your relationship because you're going after the same goal. Like chemistry means there should be passionate disagreements.
Yeah.
Like I mentioned in like, who have you had the most passionate disagreements with in your life? And as they thought of it, they're like, my family said, and who are you closest with? And it kind of dawned on them like, okay, so getting along and chemistry are two different things. Just like, you know, if you're a friend of somebody, and you've never argued with that person, how close of a friend are you?
Yeah.
You know, how good is your relationship if you haven't had passionate disagreements? Because if that's the case, then neither one of you are being vulnerable. And vulnerability is one of the biggest keys to having a strong relationship with somebody. I think as I listened to you talk with John Wooden quote, you know, he obviously understood success. And I would venture a guess that his practices were not practice that looked like people got along. My guess is they were chippy and competitive, just like you have, like your most successful teams have the ability to have those kind of practices, but there's no carryover because they remember that at the end of the day, we're going after the same goal. You have the ability, if you have the type of relationship with somebody that's a true friend or a true teammate, then during practice, if you're not on the same team, there should be some chippiness. You should end the practice upset with the other person in some way, shape, or form, but you have to have maturity to move on. And that's something that I remember doing that a lot when I was early in Bennington. We didn't have the type of athletes that were ready to compete like that. And so having to encourage that and make it okay was different. We don't have that problem right now because we have a lot of competitive kids, but I love the quote. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. And think about friendship. Friendship's, I know it was really important to John. I remember reading a lot of his books and he talked a lot about friendship and the type of sacrifice you have to make. So,
yeah. Well, I think friendship, like the best way you can, and be a friend is, or to judge the power or the depth of your relationship is, can I tell you the truth, even if you don't want to hear it, but you're still going to love me after I tell you the truth, you know? And yeah, you know, when you said your kids said, well, I don't get it. We all get along. Yeah. But you know, kind of like in all of those examples that you were using there, Luke, what my went to, but can you tell a guy the truth? Hey, you're not busting it hard enough here today. You got to get after it better, or you're shooting too much, or whatever the situation may be. And can somebody tell you the truth? Can they tell you something that you don't want to hear, but you need to hear, and yet you can still have a positive relationship with them afterwards? I think that is also another way you can really, I don't know if this is the right word or not, Coach, but to grade your team's connection, your chemistry, because like you said, you can't be just content. You've got to have those people around you that are going to push you. And that's hard to find. And it's harder to find, kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier, because their kids are trying to figure out themselves enough right now that they're, you know, they're worried about themselves. It's hard for them to take a look at Luke Olson and say, Luke, you got to box out better or whatever that may be. So I think sometimes that gets even harder to do.
Right. It's been a conflict to where like every kid that I've ever coached, they have a deep, like they genuinely want to be part of a team. They want to be part of something special. They want to be, but as they're being brought up in youth, basketball on occasion, that's different because kids jump from team to team or they move from group to group looking. So like, what they're being told of is you're the most important person. It's important to be selfish and find what's best for you. But then when they get to high school and they find out on occasion how fulfilling it can be to be genuinely part of a true team, you know, they are more than willing to be selfless as opposed to selfish, but it's an adjustment because it's not what it's like for a lot of kids as they grow up. So,
yeah. Yep. Well, speaking of youth team, great segue there, Coach Olson. I really like the way you did that. So,
yeah.
You know, your community is booming. I've just seen it from afar and, you know, talking about a couple of people that we, you know, before we got on air, just watching kids participate. When I was coaching, it seemed like there was about 100 Bennington Badger teams per grade level, with the youth tournaments and things like that. So you've got this massive, from the outside looking in, you've got a really, really large youth organization that you guys are running there in Bennington. You know, how do you kind of keep balance of it all? It's great to have that community support, but also I'm sure there's some complicating factors with it, with that many numbers. You know, how do you keep it all straight? How do you run it? Let's kind of dive into some of your philosophies and stuff and building programs. So how do you keep this this train down rolling down the tracks, Coach?
Yeah, you know, it's been a journey because of the change in it. When I first took the job, you know, I was very involved because we weren't as big yet. And so I ran the K-4 league and it was 5 Saturdays and I got to know all the players. And I used to know every kid in our program, K-12, first name and last name. Just, you know, that's what you do when you were that size. And you know, all the youth coaches and very involved. We'd run, you know, Saturday and Sunday practices for the 4th through 8th grade teams and just involved at every level. And I got to the point where I just got burned out and I couldn't do it. But I had also brought on some really good people. You know, Nick Seymour has been with me since I think year 2 or 3, and he was on my staff as a volunteer for a couple of years, and then he found his passion with the youth, and so he's run the BBA. You know, ever since we had that transition from, I felt like when we were kind of a C small B school into kind of the bigger B, he's run the BBA, and he's brought on some really talented people that are doing different roles, and it's kind of grown from kind of just a group of dads that started it, and it kind of grew, and they were just trying to put a ball in their son's hands and get them better, and daughters, because it's, you know, boys and girls side too, and it's developed into an organization where there are, you know, very talented people in different roles and scheduling and creating tournaments and gym time and practice. I mean, and so I'm not involved in that aspect at all. The BBA is a self-governing body, and then we have great people that run it. I support them at this point, and so it kind of started with I was hands-on, and I was a board member.
Yeah.
When I first, and for about the first probably 6 to 8 years, and very active and running things, and it got to the point where I couldn't do it. It had grown to the point where I couldn't do it all by myself, and we brought on some really good people, and I trusted them, and that's, I think, the most important thing as a head coach is you got to bring on people you trust and let them use their talents. And what I find is the less I did, the more the other people were able to spend their talents, and it really grew in a really good way. And so we have so many teams and so many players and so many youth coaches that are willing to help. And so it's to the point now where, you know, I show up at some of those Saturday morning things, but it runs itself. They have people that come in. Some of my former players come in and run it. We have my high school guys that are not football guys. They go and help on the Saturday morning clinics. The youth tournaments, you know, we try to pop and see our teams play as often as we can, but it's just impossible with the number of teams we have. So
yeah,
it's a tough balance because you don't, you know, the hardest thing, and Ben Reese, you know, used to tell me, this is how I felt at Norfolk, is because you go from kindergarten to 8th grade and you're telling, hey, come on, come be a part of this. We want you a part of this. Come be here. Come join our team. And then they get to high school and you have to cut some of them. And that's such a hard thing to do because it goes against what the purpose of getting this culture driven. You want a lot of people involved. And so that's been a hard thing, you know, because you get, I think this year we have 8, we have 5 8th grade boy teams. So there are, you know, 35 to 40 kids, 45 kids playing club basketball, and you know you can't keep that many next year, so just trying to figure out how to manage that and how to talk to kids, and so that's obviously a challenge. But I guess to answer your question, like it's a great problem to have the growth, but there's no way that Coach O'Connor and I could do both, you know, do it all. So the group that we have, the BBA with Nick Seymour heading it and all of his, the guys that are on his board, they've been unbelievable, really good, and the kids are benefiting from it to the point where that's why the growth is happening, because they know they're getting a good product every year. They decided to play with the BBA.
Mm-hmm. Was it hard letting go of some of those youth responsibilities?
At first, big time. So I'm a control freak. I think
most of us are.
Yeah, you know what I mean? But I did. I got to the point where as my kids were growing up, I just kind of sat down after a season and kind of went through my priorities and seen where my energy was going. And I knew I had to put more energy in other things. And I just didn't have the energy or the time. And I can't do things kind of halfway. I got to be either I'm all in or I'm not in at all. I can't kind of dabble in it. And so I just knew that if I wanted it to be as good as it was going to be, I had to just turn it over and trust the guys that were going to run it were going to do a good job. And they did. I mean, obviously we have some really talented people, but it was tough because in your head you have a vision of what you want it to be, and what they made it was not what I wanted it to be, but it's still unbelievably good. Probably better than I would have envisioned it. But had I not relinquished some of that control, and I think that's just a lesson, if you try to do everything, you're going to do an average job at everything. So you got to just find good people, trust them with what they're going to do. And there might be some, growing pains early. But as long as they know that they have control over it and you're going to stay out and just support them, they're going to figure it out. They're going to do a good job with it.
Yeah. Folks, if you are looking for a good book, guess what? I have got something for you. Kings of Their Court, 3 Teams, 1 City, and the Greatest Basketball Season in Nebraska High School History is available today on Amazon.com. It is the story of Tim Cannon at Millard North, Josh Ludke at Creighton Prep, and Doug Woodard at Bellevue West, and the 3 teams that they had during the 2021 season, the chaos that everybody was living through. The story literally picks up with the outbreak of COVID in March of 2020, and it carries through for the next 365 days. Everything that these players, these parents, these coaches that they went through from COVID quarantines to George Floyd to the politics of the time to just trying to get the season in a somewhat normal fashion with these 3 teams from this one city that were ranked in the top 25 in the country. Now, think about that. That would be hard to do in a New York and a Los Angeles. We had that here in Omaha, Nebraska. It is a terrific, terrific book. Of course, I'm a little biased because I'm the one that wrote it, but I think that if you're a basketball person or if you like a good sports story, a very amateurish version of Friday Night Lights for basketball, this is the type of story that you're really, really going to enjoy. So go to Amazon.com, go to books, type in Kings of Their Court, and it's going to take you right there to it. It's $19.99 for the paperback, $9.99 for the Kindle version. Folks, check it out. I think it's a really, really great story, and I don't think you're going to regret picking up a copy of Kings of Their Court. Coach, let's talk about practice, not a game. We're talking about practice. You've got quality facilities over there. You've got a lot of space to work with in the gym areas and different. You got 2 beautiful gymnasiums to run your practices with. And I know, Coach O'Connor's doing his thing in the other gym, but talk a little bit about your practice setup, typical practice. What does it look like? How do you structure things? Why do you structure things the way that you do? What are some things that you really like to emphasize? Just take us, take us into a Bennington practice here and how you put things together.
Yeah. I take a long time to plan my practices. I'm pretty intentional down to the minute. I want to make sure. And I kind of like we talked about earlier, right? I want to be very simple. Like when I go into practice, you work a lot of things, but I really have about 2 or 3 emphasis or focuses of the day. And everything kind of resorts back to that, whatever it is. So obviously early in the season is several things, but as the season progresses, it turns into, what are you trying to prep for the next game, or what are you really struggling with that you need to get cured up before you get into the postseason? And so I think being very simple and very intentional with your practice plan. And then we always meet before practice. On occasion, we'll watch film. But we always meet and we talk just quickly about what the points of practice are. I kind of give, a heads up of what's coming at them so that they can kind of prepare themselves mentally. So I do want them to kind of, they make that shift from, you leave your last class, you walk down to the gym, and I want to make sure. So we meet in the locker room just like we would before a game, and we talk just like we do before a game. So they get in the mindset of kind of shifting themselves from, a student mode, and now it's time to practice. And there's not, I think if you ask my players, we sacrifice a little bit of execution for energy. Like when that first whistle blows, there's not much downtime. We don't take water breaks. We don't shoot free throws during practice. Like it's kind of going from one to the next. And if you need water, go get a water, but make sure you're back in time for your roll on the drill. Cause we want to maintain a certain tempo and a certain energy at the practice. I just feel like it's hard to keep the energy level high if you're taking breaks or you're cutting down. So it's,
or you're doing a ton of talking as well. I think that's one thing that trips up a lot of coaches is they kind of get enamored with their own voice. And they're not doing it because they necessarily want to hear them, but they feel like they have to explain everything where it's like, you know, boom, 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 go figure it out type of a thing. Yep.
Especially it goes back to like, if you're trying to correct everything, you're going to do a lot of talking.
Yeah.
And so you just have to figure out like, what are your point? What are you trying to get out of this practice? And then a lot of my feedback or our feedback is going, you know, to that, whatever the main points are going to be. And so I'm a firm believer in quick bursts of communication, not much breaks. I like three teams, you know, so you're always rotating one team on and one team's coming off to get quick feedback for their next, you know, their own. So we, a lot of times we'll start with individual work, you know, 25 to 30 minutes, as a warm up type, you know, a dynamic warm up into like an individual session where guards and bigs are repping different things offensively and defensively. And then into some breakdown stuff, a lot of we shell, you know, 2-on-2, 3-on-3, 4-on-4 shell type stuff that works defensive, whatever the defensive stuff we're working on for that particular day. A lot of up and down live action, but also we never just play like an open gym, like in the summer where you play a game 7. Like it's three trips or four trips where you can quick sub and quick get feedback in and rotate guys in. So it's kind of like a game where 3 to 5 trips are going to be a whistle and you get a chance to talk to teammates. And so we try to keep it really simple, really, really energetic, really intense. To the point of, you know, we don't play out of bounds. So when a ball goes out of bounds, you know, we're trying to drill into the, you know, if you make a mistake, make up for it. And so if the ball goes out of bounds, we don't stop. You run it down. You know, if it goes into the next court, run it down and think about the next play. Just trying to train them to think about what the next play is going to be so they don't dwell on making a mistake. And so in a lot of those types of things, I think we sacrifice some execution. So there are some days we have to slow them down and focus on taking care of the basketball or, you know, make turnovers worth more points for the other team or something. To kind of to slow them down to the point where they're not making the type of mistakes that, you know, we on occasion making some of those intense practices. But and I'm a very firm believer in you get after them, and then at the end of the practice when we're done with all of our action, we give what we call weakness time, and they get to choose. They got 10 minutes or so, and they choose what they want to work on. They can grab a coach or a teammate, and you know, a lot of guys shoot some free throws in that time. I always tell, I'm a big story guy, and we've had guys during that time they'll. You know, Ben Bowen played for me back in 2016. He was a senior when he went to state for the first year, and he didn't shoot much in games. His goal, you know, his role was to guard the other team's best defense or best offensive player. And so during weakness time, he would do wall squats, sprints, and shoot free throws. And a lot of kids, you know, because we never condition. You know, we tell them, you know, if your conditioning is practice, if you are going at the type of tempo you need to go, we haven't run in line in like, you know, 10 years because our practices are supposed to be the conditioning. But a lot of kids get scared of conditioning. So we use stories like Ben was not scared. He was running because he knew that was what the team needed. And so he'd run wall squats, he'd run sprints, and he'd shoot free throws. And it made it okay to run. You know, a lot of kids fear the conditioning, fear the running. And if it helped your team win, I'd be more scared about losing than I would be about running a 10-60 or something like that. So I really like that weakness time because I think it gives kids accountability and buy-in into what they can work on, what they think the team needs. It's also a chance for them to show how committed they are to their teammates. And I'm also a believer when that's done, you know, our kids stick around and shoot after practice for 25 to 30 minutes. And I try to kind of stay out of that. I think that's really good bonding time.
Yep.
Now there's been a couple of years where, you know, kids will leave and I'll ask them like, where are you going? Like, practice is over, but you know, this is a pretty important part of the day. Like these guys want to see when you're, you know, you're playing horse games or you're shooting competitions and you're shooting free throws and whatever they do. And that's, I think, really important because it's, send the message like this is a safe place to be yourself. Like the energy levels has dropped. It's no longer chippy and intense. You know, blue and white can get along right now. And a lot of times when it does get, you know, really chippy practice, I'm pretty intentional about making a guy on blue partner up with a guy on white to get some shots up because that's how they remind each other, hey, we're fine. Yeah. Like I know we get out to each other, but this is, remember, we're good. And by the time they walk out of the gym, everybody's fine.
Yeah.
And they're the next day.
Yep. I love that concept of the weakness time. We used to do occasionally, I think we called it free skill work, where kind of the same type of thing, here's a list of 8 or 10 just individual drills. You got 10 minutes, work on whatever you want to work on for 10 minutes. And we got away from it and never went back to it. But now that you've said that, now that's back in my head. And now I'm sitting there thinking, that's a great idea, Coach Olson. I should have done that. What an idiot, So, but I really like that. And I like the way you, like you said, bringing it back together at the end. We're going to get after each other for 2 hours, but then the other 22 hours, we're going to be just fine, Yeah. And I think that's important too. So, and that kind of brings us into kind of the culture component. We've kind of touched on a lot of different things with that throughout the podcast here tonight. And as we kind of start wrapping some things up, just kind of talk about your culture there at Bennington and what you've tried to build. And we've talked about the certified mental game stuff. We've talked about the weakness time, the way that you practice. I love the part about no conditioning in practice. I think that's the way it should be. What are some other things that you're trying to do here to continue to build that culture within your community and within your program?
Yeah. I was always told when I was younger, I think, and I was told when you're running practice, like if you walk into a practice, you should be able to figure out what's important to that team within the first few minutes, just by how they're practicing. It's like, I wonder, I've had some people come in and watch our practice. And I always like getting feedback. And one thing they always bring up is the energy. And I think our guys genuinely, they really do enjoy practice. They want to be there. They want to have the tough stuff. And I think, there's been some things that we've not done a very good job, but one thing we've been pretty committed to is making sure that the tough parts of practice is not something that they see and they embrace. Mm-hmm. We'll tell them a lot, you'll get them really tired after a really intense shell drill. And then there's we call it kill drill. You're trying to get 3 stops consecutively and after transition and stuff like that. And I'll tell them, I can't get you this tired 20 times. Like, this is an opportunity. I got you this tired for a reason. You can either choose to focus on how tired, or you can use this as an opportunity to get yourself ready for getting a kill late in a tough game when you're feeling this way exhausted. Like, you only get these opportunities once every so often, so you got to take advantage of it. I think our guys, they embrace the hard, they embrace the difficulty of practice. And I think that starts with the older guys that have been through it. And I think you hope that it just filters on down. I'm a big storyteller, and so we talk about previous players and what they've done and some of the things they struggled with, but also, rallied through. And I have a clip on Huddle, I call it Badger Legends, and it's just some of the biggest plays in our history and the biggest games, state games, district tournament games, and just big shots. And we talk about, those plays were made in practice. Those guys made those plays in the reps. Like, that shot that you see him hit to win a district final, he shot that 50 times after practice every day for a month because he knew that set was going to be called in that situation. So you got to paint the picture so they see it. I think if you watch our practices, they're very intentional about attacking drills, because there's no wasted time. Like, they know that everything we do is pretty intentional. There's a reason behind it. They've been prepped for it. So I would say, you want them to walk in knowing that it's going to be a really energetic, really intense, really difficult 2 hours. But if they embrace it, it's going to end up being a really good thing, and they're going to become more connected. And I think that would be the other thing I would hope is our guys still pretty connected. They know that when they're in the gym and around their team, it's a safe place to give effort. Nobody's going to challenge you for being a tryhard. Nobody's going to challenge you for being, if you're putting in effort, you are very much like everybody else in the gym. The guys that are not putting in effort are the ones that kind of stand out. And I think we've had enough times where guys have challenged that to know that, if you're not going to give effort, you may as well not come, because it's not going to be something that's received very well with guys. And so yeah. I hope that, I hope that's what they would say. And that's the feedback that I get from the players that are leaving our program, is they enjoy the practices. They love the games, but they enjoy the practices because it really is kind of shared suffering, in a sense. It's going to be hard. It's going to be tough and intense, but you're going to be closer from it. And then you can always look back and realize, a lot of times after you win a game, you can trace the reasons that you won the game back to what we've done in practice.
Yeah. And I think that's a calling card of any quality program, any quality coach. When you win a tough game, when you go through something like that, one of the first things that you should be able to do is say, "Hey, ladies or gentlemen, remember when we had to, we emphasize, our kill drill. Well, hey, we were down 1 with 3 minutes left. We got a kill and we scored two out of those three possessions and we end up winning by three. That's why we do that in practice. And I think that any coach that's worth their salt trying to build their program, that's why you do the things that you do in practice. And that's why you have to spend so much time planning your practice, because you only have so much time with the kids. And therefore, you have to make sure that the stuff that you're doing in practice are going to be game applicable, because you got to make it work in that way. Yeah. Yep. Coach Luke Olson, head boys basketball coach, Bennington High School. It has been awesome having you on, Coach. Coach, if people want to know more about you or your program, how can they find out about you?
You know, unfortunately, I'm not a big social media guy. My kids are, but I'm not. You know, we have a.
Well, I really don't want to give out teenagers' Twitter handles here. That's a little awkward. So
avoid that. I was gonna say, if you want anything on basketball, just follow our players. They do it. But we're not related on social media. I will say, we got a lot of opportunities. So I have the youth camps and the amount of stuff our high school kids do. It shows, and I think our high school Twitter page probably posts a lot of our stuff, but we're in Bennington. I mean, we're not hard to find. Just follow the big crowd of people. We're grilling and busting at the seams. So there used to be a lot of farmland, and now there's a lot of houses. So yeah, it's a good problem to have, but it's something definitely.
Follow that big just swarm of blue on a Friday night from I can't remember the name of the place. You got one across the street from the other one, but it's the bigger one down in the basement area there. I've been there a couple of times, but the Stumble Inn, there you go. Follow from the Stumble Inn. Now don't be stumbling, have a nice meal and perhaps a beverage and then head over to the high school from there. It's not that far away. So yeah. Coach Olson, thanks so much for coming on. Hope you enjoyed your debut episode here, your debut appearance on A Pen and a Napkin.
I did. Had a lot of fun. I appreciate the invite.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for coming on. If you could hold the line here, we got a couple of things to go through here. Again, Luke Olson, head boys basketball coach, Bennington High School, built a really, really nice program there. Eastern Midlands Conference, one of the best conferences in the state, and they're consistently in the battle there with the Norrises and the Elkhorn Norse this year and all of those folks. So coach's got a really good program rolling there. Really grateful to have him on. Really grateful for Cosac Chiropractic, our founding sponsor. Follow us on Twitter at A Pen and a Napkin. Download, rate, review. Again, subscribe, do all of those different things for the pod. Questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Get out to our coaches clinic. Time is clicking here. It's dwindling away. I have yet to see Luke Olson's registration from Bennington High School come in for the A Pen and a Napkin clinic on April the 12th here. Not that I'm guilting anybody in any way, shape, or form, but no, we've got a great lineup. We do have, like we mentioned, Andy King, weekday Wade Coulter. We got Raz Vanderloo coming down from Sioux City East, USA basketball. We got my friend Jody Steyer from Iowa State University, women's associate head coach there at Iowa State. We've got Lucas Dollinghouse, who's just won his third straight state championship at Johnson Brock. And we've got Jamie Smith from Solon High School that's going to come in and talk about shooting, going to wrap everything up. So it's going to be a great day. Make sure you get registered. Folks, hope you've enjoyed this podcast in particular. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.